If I asked you how many subscriptions you have, would you be able to list all of them and how much you're paying? If you would have asked me this question before I started using Rocket Money, I would have said yes. But let me tell you, I would have been so wrong. I can't believe how many I had and all the money I was wasting. Rocket Money is a personal finance app that finds and cancels your unwanted subscriptions, monitors your spending, and helps lower your bills. Rocket Money has over 5 million users and has helped save its members an average of $720 a year with over 500 million in canceled subscriptions. Stop wasting money on things you don't use. Cancel your unwanted subscriptions by going to rocketmoney.com/wondery. That's rocketmoney.com/wondery. rocketmoney.com/wondery.
Hey everyone, a quick warning. This episode does have descriptions of violence as well as explicit language. It may not be appropriate for kids. Just days after two men walked out of the Museum of Natural History with a priceless gem collection, the entire country was abuzz with media reports about the crime. And when three handsome surf boys were arrested, it reached a fever pitch.
The story began with a theft of $400,000 worth of gems from a New York City museum. But the setting quickly shifted to Miami with the arrest of Murph the Surf Murphy and his friend, Alan Kuhn.
It hadn't taken long for the FBI to find Jack Murphy and Alan Kuhn after the two pulled off the robbery. But the ride was just getting started.
If you're like me and refuse to let go of your skinny jeans, you're a millennial. And if you're a millennial, it's time to add Clarins Multi-Active Cream to your daily routine. Rooted in nature and innovated with science, Clarins has a long legacy of creating industry-first, plant-forward products. Using a skin charger complex made of 2% niacinamide and sea holly bioextract, Clarins Multi-Active Cream has been clinically proven to target the first visible signs of aging by smoothing lines and wrinkles, refining pores, evening tone and texture, and strengthening the skin's moisture barrier. While Multi-Active Cream can't bring back the golden age of boy bands, it can de-stress your skin. Clarins Multi-Active Cream is available online now. Go to clarins.com/truecrime and get Multi-Active Day and Night Cream for 10% off, a free welcome gift, plus free shipping on your first order. That's clarins.com/truecrime with promo code TRUECRIME. clarins.com/truecrime with promo code TRUECRIME.
My name is Nate Scott. I'm a reporter and editor with For the Win and USA Today Sports. This is The Sneak. Some called it the crime of the century, and for good reason. People at the time couldn't get enough of the story.
It was certainly big at the time.
That's Corey Kilgannon, who interviewed Jack for the New York Times.
You know, when you go back and look at, it's one thing to Google something, but then it's another thing to go back and look at the papers, you know, day to day, like the first day story, the second day story, a week out, a couple months out. And the story definitely, like, as we say, had legs.
The heist had grabbed headlines before police even had suspects. But when one turned out to be a former national surfing champion, the stories multiplied. One of those stories was written by a 23-year-old Nora Ephron, who would go on to write When Harry Met Sally, Sleepless in Seattle, and a host of other classics. Ephron landed her first big break with a front-page story about the heist for the New York Post, chronicling the boys' hard partying in the hours after the crime. And that partying? That's what helped lead to their arrest.
Between the end of the heist and before they get on that airplane, these guys, like a bunch of amateurs, start celebrating in their hotel.
That's Sal Bono, reporter for Inside Edition's New York Gritty series.
Basically, they wanted to get caught. It seemed, you know, they just didn't lay low. They wanted to be celebrities in a way. And then they get on a plane and go to Miami the next day as if nothing happened.
Both the NYPD and FBI were on the case, and it didn't take long for them to hear about the Florida boys who had been pulling jobs in and around New York City, then celebrating in the hotel the night after. But without eyewitnesses, authorities knew the case wasn't going to be a cakewalk. They did have a secret weapon, however. A prosecutor who went to extraordinary lengths to bring the men to justice. Here's Jack Murphy.
So we started that whole ordeal of flying back and forth the court cases, and then we had big attorneys, and so they started jamming us up. And then the name Maurice Najari, he was the prosecutor up there, he got involved.
So I'll start by asking your name and what you do.
My name is Douglas Najjari. I'm a white-collar criminal lawyer, and I work in the New York metropolitan area.
Douglas Najjari, son of legendary Manhattan prosecutor Maurice Najjari, was only six at the time of the Star of India heist. But he remembers his dad's role in the bizarre aftermath as if it were yesterday.
I first heard about this case before it broke in the news media in 1963, 1964, when my dad came home from work. And I do remember it. I was very young, but I do remember it. And one evening after work, he came home. He packed a bag. He said he's got to go to Florida. Couldn't tell us why. And couldn't tell us when he was going to be back. And he returned within a week's time and told this. If it weren't credible, I would tell you it's an incredible tale, an incredible story of crime and intrigue and recovery.
Before we get into this case, could you just tell us about your father as a man?
So my father's name is Maurice Najjari. He passed away a couple of months ago. My dad was a unique person, and I think in many ways at his memorial service, he was referred to by others as a lion.
Maurice Najjari would go on to become a local legend for a years-long crusade against corruption in the city, which resulted in perhaps his most famous case when he charged the Queens District Attorney, Thomas J. Mackle, with misconduct. Najjari would also gain a reputation as someone who's willing to skirt the rules to get justice done. And his first big case? That was the Star of India heist. When Najjari was called in, police had already arrested Murphy, Kuhn, and Clark. But they quickly realized the case was thin.
His bureau chief was a guy named Jim Juergen. And Mr. Juergen came to him and said, here, this one's yours. We don't expect much of you. It's a dog. And when we call a case a dog, it means it's a tough case. The evidence is flimsy. You're probably not going to be able to try this case and win it, so get what you can out of it, get out and move on to the next case.
His boss was right. The case was a bit of a dog. The three were bailed out, and without the gems, there wasn't much connecting them to the crime. This was before DNA testing. There were no eyewitnesses. There was no security camera footage. But Najjari was determined, partly because he thought he could solve the case, but partly because he was getting really, really sick of the attention that Murphy, Kuhn, and Clark were getting.
Somehow the guys got, you know, a bail situation where they could leave the state, so they kept, you know, they went back to Miami and just kept partying.
Again, that's Corey Kilgannon of the New York Times.
They were very visible. They were, you know, they were not keeping a low profile at all. They were quite the opposite, you know, and they were trying to rub it in the noses of the authorities anyway. So that kind of kept it alive.
Photos and footage of Jack and Alan during this time, when they were shuttling back and forth from the Florida Surf to Manhattan courtrooms, show two men that exhibited little regard for the criminal justice system. In fact, they show no respect for it whatsoever. Instead, they milk the spotlight, opting to exude the confidence of the suave criminals they'd seen in the movies. Here's Jack talking to a newscaster at the time.
As your popularity picked up along the beach where you surfboard.
We were always popular.
It also didn't hurt that they looked the part.
That kind of Rat Pack chic that he kind of embodied and Alan kind of embodied, you know, these handsome guys, really well-dressed, those like narrow peg trousers, little gig boots. Here they are all being walked by these detectives, you know, big barrel-chested detectives. And here they are, you know, these kind of suave, you know, like lithe guys. You can see they're athletes. You can see they're surfers. You can see whatever they are, divers or whatever he is, you know. He's everything, apparently, you know. It's like undeniable.
Jack and Alan were waging a charm war against the establishment at a time when that would have been utterly refreshing.
You know, 64, difficult time in American life. Lots of painful, you know, a year after the assassination.
That's the voice of Merrill Gordon, who wrote about the crime for Vanity Fair.
And here is something that's, it's fun. I mean, we all sort of, I think, fantasize about getting away with some little crime of our own that, you know, nobody gets hurt at. So the fact that they did it, and it was so daring, I think made it an enjoyable story to follow. And also a lot of what's going to happen next.
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Whether you're selling t-shirts from a booth at your local farmer's market or dishing out handmade crafts online, Shopify's POS system manages it all. Unite your in-person and online business with a trusted platform that supports your retail hustle. Get started with hardware tailored to your needs, from payments on the go to full-scale retail setups, with round-the-clock support to keep your sales smooth as silk. Do the smart thing for retail. Go with Shopify. For a limited time, sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/wondery, all lowercase. Take your business to new heights. Visit shopify.com/wondery today. That's shopify.com/wondery. Have you ever covered a carpet stain with a rug? Ignored a leaky faucet? Pretended your half-painted living room is supposed to look like that? Well, you're not alone. We've all got unfinished home projects. But there's an easier way. When you download Thumbtack, it's easier to care for your home from top to bottom. Pull out your phone and in just a few steps, you can search, chat, and book highly rated pros right in your neighborhood. Plus, you'll know what to tackle next, because Thumbtack is the app that shows you what to do, who to hire, and when. So say goodbye to all those unfinished home projects and say hello to caring for your home the easier way. Download Thumbtack and start a project today.
America was loving Jack Murphy and his gang. Maurice Najjari, the pugnacious New York City prosecutor, he wasn't enjoying it at all. Najjari needed to find the gems, but to do so, he needed to get Murphy, Kuhn, or Clark to talk. And he couldn't put pressure on them while they were out on bail in Miami. He needed them back in New York, preferably behind bars. Here's Merrill Gordon again, who interviewed Maurice Najjari back in 2014.
So he was digging through every possible crime indictment. When you asked him about how he finally brought them to justice, you got the feeling that it was a bit of a trumped up charge that allowed him ultimately to bring them to New York to jail, and jail was the thing that caused Alan to speak out about where the jewels were.
And this was Ava Gabor.
Yeah.
Yes, that Ava Gabor, the star of Green Acres, or for a younger generation perhaps, the voice of the Mama Cat and the Aristocats. Right around the time of the Star of India heist, Gabor had been the victim of an alleged violent robbery in New York.
So then this other guy pointed this gun at me, and I, with my terrible temper, went after him. I swacked him, but I didn't hurt him. And then he hit me, this ungentlemanly bum.
That's Gabor talking to reporters about the alleged attack back in 1964.
Did you bite him? I couldn't have a chance to bite him. I just did like that. Then he hit me with the side of the gun here, and I got a nice shiner here.
After police didn't get much of anywhere with the Gabor case, they showed the actress photos of Murphy, Kuhn, and Clark, and she positively ID'd them. Were they the ones who did it? Or was Gabor just recognizing the faces of the three surf boys on the cover of every newspaper in the country?
She said she'd been pistol whipped and robbed, but she refused to testify, but she identified them. There were some questions about whether this was a publicity stunt on her part, but again, it gave Najjari the paperwork to move forward.
But what Maurice Najjari did, he and some other guys put their heads together and they started finding phony charges.
That's Jack Murphy talking. To this day, Murphy denies many of the charges levied against him in the aftermath of the Star of India heist, especially the Gabor case.
Ava Gabor, and everybody knew that I didn't have anything at all to do with that. None at all. But it got her some headlines, got her on the Johnny Carson show.
I asked Maurice Najjari's son, Douglas, about this.
You know that Jack Murphy maintains that the Ava Gabor charge was trumped up, that he never had anything to do with that.
I've heard that.
You're with your dad on this one, though.
Yeah, sure. I mean, I know my father. I know that he was an ethical prosecutor who would never prosecute people who he knew were innocent for crimes they didn't commit. And that's sinful. The sinner was on the other side of this case.
Whether the charges were trumped up or not, Najjari now had the three behind bars in New York. That gave him leverage.
Maurice Najjari knew, among other things, knew human nature, and he knew that these guys were not tough guys. And when I say not tough guys, meaning they lived a very high life in Miami, and they were not going to suffer life in what we refer to as the Tombs very well in New York. And the Tombs is the holding facility next to the criminal courts building in Manhattan. And it is, I've been in there. It is as god-awful a building as still exists in America. And he knew that they would not last there. and that sooner or later, one of them would reach out to try to make a deal.
Najari was right. Alan Kuhn was the first to break. He told Najari he'd take them to Miami. In exchange for helping authorities find the stones, they'd cut his, Jack, and Roger's prison sentence down to a year each. There was just one problem. Kuhn and Murphy didn't know exactly where the gems were.
Alan had given all the jewels to a partner of his, a friend of his down there.
Dickie Pearson?
Yeah.
Dickie Pearson was a prolific fence, or in other words, a reseller of stolen goods. He was a player and a fixture in the Miami underworld, cast perfectly for his role in the Star of India heist.
He went down to Miami and Pearson had taken this ruby and he had hawked it.
Okay, so quick recap here because this is moving fast. Jack, Alan, and Roger were in the Tombs in New York City, locked up for the alleged robbery of Ava Gabor. The gems were somewhere in Miami. But Jack and Alan weren't exactly sure where, because they'd given the stones to their fence, Dickie Pearson, who had hawked at least one of them and presumably hidden the others. So Najari and his crew decided they would take Alan down there to try and find the gems, which leads to their next big problem. They didn't have permission to take Alan anywhere. Doug Najari explains.
You know, the old saying about the best laid plans, they were unable, I believe, to get a judge in time on Friday to sign an order to get Kuhn bailed out to them. And this was a bygone era. So, and while this could never happen today, what they ended up doing, the two detectives, I guess, who had relationships with the corrections department and my dad, they basically kidnapped Kuhn out of the Tombs. They grabbed him out of the Tombs on a Friday. They whisked him down to Florida. And Frank Hogan, who was the DA of Manhattan, was aware of the plan, knew what was going on, knew that it was fraught with danger, told Maurice, get the gems or don't come home. So they whisked him off to Florida. And now they're trying, again, to fly under the radar. They don't want the FBI to know they're there.
That's another thing I forgot to mention. The Manhattan DA wasn't the only office trying to solve this crime. The FBI also was on the case, and they had no idea that Najari and two NYPD detectives had absconded with Alan to Miami. And that's not even to mention that word was getting out in the Miami crime scene that the gems were in play.
They don't want the underworld guys to know they're there because then the gems will disappear. And they certainly don't want the media to know because the media will alert everybody. And they've got to deal with Kuhn, who was a quirky, difficult guy.
Before we get too much further, we should talk a bit about Alan Kuhn. It's rare to have a true crime story with one handsome, cocky, debonair criminal. This story has two. Alan was handsome and athletic, just like Jack was. And, if anything, old footage shows him as the more confident of the two.
You don't object to going back to New York tomorrow under different circumstances?
Well, we definitely not. We don't object. It probably won't be as enjoyable as it was the first time, but no, we don't object going back to
any more museum visits in store this trip?
No more visits to the museums. Not this trip.
That's Alan talking to a newscaster down in Miami. In the video footage, Alan is tanned with a high fade haircut and a strong jaw. He's wearing a fitted suit complete with skinny tie. The man had a look. He had confidence. And once he was down in Florida with Maurice Najari, he was a complete pain in the ass.
So they get to Florida, they rent a typical black sedan that looks like a police car, you know, an undercover, unmarked car. And Kuhn is mortified. And he says, I'm not going to be seen in this car. I want a convertible. And Maury turns to him and says, you're not getting a fucking convertible. And Kuhn folded his arms and said, no convertible, no gems. They returned the car. They got a convertible.
From there, things got even more ridiculous. Kuhn, perhaps understanding that he had a bit of power here, began making even more demands.
Kuhn at times would decide, while they're out on their adventures trying to find their contacts, he's got to get back to the hotel room. Bugs Bunny is on at 3 o'clock. So they would have to stop what they're doing and go back to the hotel room so Kuhn could watch the cartoons he wanted to watch.
You heard him right. Bugs Bunny.
No, you don't. You're under arrest.
On what charge? You got nothing on me.
Najari and the police officers eventually got Alan to start making calls, but they had no way of knowing if he was actually trying to track down the jewels or was just taking them on a wild goose chase.
At one point, there was some information that some of the gems were in Biscayne Bay, either buried in the bay or, I believe, taped to Kuhn's boat.
Najari called his boss, New York District Attorney Frank Hogan, and told him they would need to get the Dade County Sheriff to lend them their diving team to look for the jewels. But Hogan wasn't having it.
Hogan says, you know what, Maury? I don't know the Dade County Sheriff. I don't trust the Dade County Sheriff. I want you to scuba dive for the gems. And he tells him, Mr. Hogan, I don't know how to scuba dive. And he says, well, learn or don't come home.
So the crew went out in a boat and Maurice Najari jumped in the water. Here's the New York Times' Corey Kilgannon.
He was up for the whole task. I mean, he put on a swim mask and snorkel and went in, was it Biscayne Bay or wherever, to look for the jewels. I mean, he was down for this.
Still, no luck. And Najari, feeling the pressure, was apparently letting Kuhn start to get to him. Again, this is Doug Najari.
And the way the story is told, he'd had it with Kuhn at one point in the car when Kuhn decided they've got to go back and either switch cars, change clothes, see cartoons, whatever it was. And he jumps across the front from the front seat to the back seat and he says, I've had it with him. I'm going to kill him. And he wants to strangle Kuhn. So you can imagine that there's a detective in the front trying to pull him back. And Kuhn in the back was trying to get away from this very physically powerful, intimidating, you know, crazy assistant district attorney who is hell-bent on somehow recovering the gems. And if he's not going to recover the gems, I don't think Kuhn's going to get out of this alive.
The breakthrough came with a 3 a.m. phone call to the University Inn, where Kuhn, Najari, and several other lawmen were staying. At this point, they linked up with an intermediary, who was another Miami underworld player and jewel fence, High Gordon. Together, a detective and Gordon drove to a coffee shop, as they'd been instructed to do on the phone. The men went inside briefly, and when they returned to their car, there was a note inside it, along with a key, directing them to the Trailways bus station and locker 911. High Gordon stuffed the incriminating note in his mouth and swallowed it, and the men proceeded to the bus station.
Ultimately, they do get a phone call. Kuhn gets the call. And there's an intermediary who recovers the gems, and they're in a little chamois bag that's soaking wet, which of course leads us to believe that they were, in fact, underwater.
They had done it. Almost. Here's Sal Bono again.
And lo and behold, in a wet bag, there were two out of the three precious gems that were stolen from the Museum of Natural History.
That's right. Only two. The DeLong Star Ruby, one of the priceless gems, was still missing. In its place were several other of the smaller stones from the heist. But time was of the essence, and Frank Hogan needed them back immediately. Their Florida escapade was over, DeLong Ruby or not. They didn't even have time to track down a proper jewel case.
They book a commercial flight back to New York. My father has this in his suit pocket, dripping wet. The most valuable gem collection in the world. In his suit pocket on a commercial flight to Manhattan.
They made it back to New York with two of the stones. And Jack and Alan hoped that would be enough to keep the original terms of the deal alive.
So he gave back the big Star of India sapphire and the black sapphire, and then he compensated a bunch of other junk, these other lesser stones, to hope that that would take the weight for the ruby that was missing. But it didn't work.
No, it did not. Without the DeLong ruby, the deal as they agreed to it, it was void.
So the Najari said, okay, here's the deal. That wasn't the deal. The museum can't replace that ruby. They wanted the three stones they couldn't replace. They can replace all that other stuff that he gave. So we're going to give you 3 years.
On April 6, 1965, Alan Kuhn, Jack Murphy, and Roger Clark all pled guilty to burglary and grand larceny. Najari claimed the men had not cooperated in the retrieval of the priceless gems and asked for a 3-year sentence. The judge agreed, sending them to Rikers Island.
Now, if the ruby comes back, we'll run those 3 years together. Instead of them being consecutive, they'll be concurrent years, and you'll end up... Well, Pearson goofed around and screwed around and didn't get that ruby back.
Where was that priceless ruby during all this? Well, to this day, it's unclear. Less than a year after Jack, Allen, and Roger were convicted, an enterprising freelance writer named Francis P. Antle went on a hunt for the DeLong Ruby. Eventually, he learned that he could get his hands on it if someone paid up a $25,000 ransom. And while that may not seem like a lot, you have to remember that this stone, you couldn't just sell it off or cut it up into smaller rubies. It's really hard to fence the most famous ruby in the world. Anyway, it was then that billionaire John D. MacArthur, whose foundation now issues the MacArthur Genius Grants, he got involved. MacArthur agreed to pony up the ransom, and the stone was recovered, once again dropped off in a bus locker in Miami. As to who had it this whole time? Again, unclear. A few months later, Dickie Pearson, the fence who originally took the stones off Allen, was arrested for burglarizing a jewelry store in Macon, Georgia. He had some cash on him, and police took the bills and ran the serial numbers. They matched those of the ransom money. Had Pearson had the ruby the entire time? Or had he recovered it in time to collect on the ransom? We don't know. What we do know is that Pearson was sentenced to 10 years in jail, more than Kuhn, Murphy, and Clark served for the crime combined. Pearson died in 1990.
Why did he go above and beyond so much on this case?
I'm talking to Doug Najari, asking him about his father, Maurice, and the wild lengths he went to catch these men.
Well, that's who he was. This was a crime that offended him, and it offended him for many reasons. It offended him because he felt that the gems belonged to the museum and belonged to the city of New York, and it was a cultural attraction, and it wasn't theirs to take, regardless of who they thought they were or what they could get for them. They didn't belong to these guys. They belonged to us. They belonged to the museum and to the public that adored it.
Murphy, Kuhn, and Clark ended up serving 2 years, then walked out of Rikers Island as free men. Kuhn and Clark would clean up their acts and go on to lead full lives as mostly law-abiding citizens. Jack Murphy, however, didn't clean up his act. Jack Murphy went back to Miami.
When I got back to Miami, the first thing that I did when I hit home, when I got to the airport and I had a buddy pick me up, I didn't go over to see friends or family or I went and got a pistol.
The Sneak is a production of For the Win and USA Today. It is written and produced by myself, along with Anthony Pacillo. Our field recordist is Gustavo Moeller, and our music supervisor and audio engineer is Claire Morgan of Nodderly. Research by Emily Lacaze. Video and image work from Emmanuel Lozano and Alyssa Williams. Our executives are Mark Hyland, Scott Stein, and Kate Gutman. Special thanks to the USA Today podcast squad, Shannon Green and Claire Thornton, and the crew at Wondery, especially our marketing wizard, Alex Carpenter. Additional thanks to the investigative team at the Naples Daily News for their help with reporting, and the amazing team at Miami-Dade College's Wolfson Archives, who provided our archival footage.
Whether you're working out, walking, or running errands, Audible can help you keep your heart rate up month after month with their pulse-pounding collection of thrilling audiobooks that you can't hear anywhere else. As an Audible member, you can choose one title a month to keep from their entire catalog, which includes thousands of titles. This month, check out the Audible original, The Space Within. It's a chilling 8-part story about a psychiatrist, Dr. Maddie Weil, voiced by Academy Award winner Jessica Chastain, who is tasked with unlocking the memories of a child who went missing for 7 hours. Maddie soon discovers that there are more who have faced similar experiences, and the truth of what is happening to them may impact the fate of humankind. New members can try Audible free for 30 days. Visit audible.com/thrill or text thrill to 500-500. That's audible.com/thrill or text thrill to 500-500.